Welcome to A Journey Through the Bible podcast. My name is Johannes.
And I'm Benjamin.
And yeah, we're so glad you're listening.
Yeah, this is the podcast where we're reading through the Bible together, 9 months,
yep.
5 times through the Bible,
yeah,
studying it,
yeah,
through exciting. The inductive method.
Yeah,
it's going to be super good.
Yeah.
So, welcome, and let us dig straight into our first book.
Yeah. All right, so this is our first episode where we actually look at a book.
Yes! Exciting.
All right, so we started off this school with the book of Philemon.
The biggest book of the Bible.
No.
Oh, okay.
But not even close.
Okay, it's actually just a one chapter, one page book of the Bible.
Yeah. But it still contained a lot of really cool things that I was like, I had no idea that I could get this out of this little amount of text.
I thought it was ridiculous. First, I was like, okay, what up? What is this? Like, legit, a one-page book.
Yep.
And then we started digging into it.
Yeah.
It's like, what? This is crazy.
Yeah.
Really cool. So, who wrote this book?
All right, so I think it's safe to say that it was Paul who wrote this letter.
We're going to stand on the page that this was Paul who wrote this letter.
Yeah. We're going to do it. And do you want to walk us through what's in it, kind of?
Yeah, we can try at least.
What it's about?
Yeah, so very, very short. It's about this guy, Onesimus.
Yeah.
He's a slave to Philemon.
Yeah.
And he most likely ran away from Philemon.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, and so he must have met Paul somewhere. And I think that this would be when Paul was a prisoner in Rome.
Yeah.
So we're thinking somewhere around 60 to 62 after Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely we have Onesimus meeting up with Paul in prison there.
Yeah.
And getting saved.
Yeah.
So the idea of the book is basically just Paul writing a letter to Philemon, and most likely actually Onesimus was being the messenger who carried this letter.
Yeah.
So it basically is a letter of recommendation that Philemon should receive Onesimus again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so Philemon was probably the owner of the slave, or bondservant as it's used here, Onesimus. And if Onesimus had run away from Philemon, then he would have had all the right in the world to punish him for what he had done. And Paul is basically writing and saying, hey, Onesimus is saved now. He's one of our brothers. He's one of us. And please receive him back, not as a bondservant, but as a brother.
And just like we maybe should have gone in more deep into this, but just the idea of that is just so foreign in that time too,
mm-hmm.
where that someone would ask, hey, this is your right, but I ask you, don't use your right.
Yeah.
It's just mind blowing to me.
Yeah.
It's like I would today be asking, hey, can you work for me? But I can't pay you because I don't want to. Maybe not, but you know, it's very similar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But in a way, Philemon has this right to take out punishment on Onesimus, and Paul is asking him not to exercise that right, but to have grace and forgiveness and to instead accept him as. And Paul is even referring to Onesimus now even being useful.
Yeah.
Like, now he actually, like, is useful to you, Philemon.
Fun little fact that actually Onesimus means useful.
Yeah. I mean,
it's amazing.
It's amazing.
Always in the Bible stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the biggest things for me was that the forgiveness. And I think one of our teachers talked about this during Philemon, that forgiveness is often about giving up one's right to offense and one's right that I have to be angry with someone, or the right that I have to take out punishment, or the right that I feel like I have because someone else did something wrong to me. It wasn't my fault. Someone else did it to me. But forgiveness is about giving up your rights. It's
yeah.
about giving up that right.
It's like the true grace of God. It's like, it doesn't matter. You have done something against me, but I'm choosing to not look that way and forgive you.
Yeah.
You wronged me, but, and I have the right to punish you. It's all in my will, but I'm going to choose not to.
Yeah.
It's a tough thought of thinking today. Like,
yeah, it is.
When people wrong us or like trying to take advantage of us.
Yeah.
And that would be like that we didn't go to the police when someone is taking advantage of us if they come and ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
But then again, if we think about it from this perspective, Onesimus actually changed his ways. He's new. According to Paul, he's saved. He's a brother.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting too, how Paul used the language to really like poke an Philemon to really think this through before he do something that he's actually a brother now.
Yeah.
He has the same standard as you have in heaven.
Yeah.
I think that's also in that time that would have been like, what? What are you talking about? That is
crazy.
It's like, what? He's a king? No, he's a slave.
Yeah.
But no, he's a king now.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, in the kingdom. As a master, a slave master of sorts, or just someone who's wealthy enough to have slaves, to then all of a sudden be like, you know what? Well, in the kingdom of God, we don't have those positions, that status anymore. We're all taken up into the same family. We're joined together. And that is a crazy idea, I think, back then.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Like, it's not like you're just not slave anymore. But that's basically what Paul is asking. It's like, no longer as a bondservant, but more than a bondservant.
Yeah.
As a beloved brother. Not even just as a brother, a beloved brother.
Yeah. Yeah. And Paul is like, if you consider me your partner, receive him, Onesimus, as you would receive me. And I mean, Philemon would probably receive Paul with like the highest of honors, you know. Like,
oh, for sure he would.
Paul most likely led Philemon to the Lord. Like, Philemon probably reveres Paul, you know, like he's...
Oh, for sure.
He's one of those big guys, you know, I want to receive him with honor. And then all of a sudden, Paul is writing and saying, hey, this runaway slave, he is your brother now. He's one of us. He's in the family of Christ.
Yeah.
Receive him as you would receive me.
Like in verse 17. So if you consider me your partner, receive him as you would receive me.
Yeah.
It's like I'm taking the prize for this guy. Continuing in 18, if he has wronged you at all or owes you anything, charge that to my account.
Yeah.
It's like, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But then it actually sounds in verse 19, in the end of verse 19, to say nothing of your owing me even your own self.
Yeah.
So it sounds like Paul would have been the guy who led Philemon to Lord too. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but I like that verse 18, you were saying, if he has wronged you at all or owes you anything, charge that to my account.
Yeah.
That's some real like Jesus type language that's coming in.
Oh, for
in
sure.
Like, if he's wronged you at all, I'll take it. It's on me.
Like, Paul is just willing to take the price.
Yeah.
For everything. It's
crazy. If Onesimus has done anything wrong, just like me, Johannes, have sinned and done stuff wrong, Paul is just saying, hey, charge that to my account.
Yeah.
Just as Jesus took our wrongs. And he's just like, he's living out... He's being Christ.
Oh, for
he's
sure.
He's living
he
out
is.
The gospel.
He's willing to live in that sacrifice.
Yes. Yeah.
And we see that too, like throughout other books. And even here, we know that Paul is a prisoner for Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So
Yeah.
We will know in this fact that he was actually imprisoned for the cause of the gospel.
Yeah, and what an example he is.
Oof. I wish I was that example.
Yeah, I don't know if I wish I was that example. Yeah, I wish I was that example, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. But in all reality, I believe that's what God is calling us to do.
Yeah.
He's calling us to live that way.
Yeah, to be Christ-like.
Yeah. And so now we have talked about a lot of what actually is happening in this book, but mm-hmm. what were some things that stood out to you, like things that that you felt was applicable today?
Well, the first thing I would say is probably that, like, that forgiving is really giving up your own right to what you think is yours, your right to offense, or when you haven't done something wrong, but you're still giving up the right to whatever you think you have towards another person.
Yeah.
I think that's just, that's, I don't know, that hits me really deep. And because, yeah, forgiveness in that way, and just, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Forgiveness overall is enormous.
Yeah.
One of the things I wrote down is when we're studying these books, we use something we call charts. It doesn't really matter. It's just how we use the inductive method. But one of the things I wrote down is a timeless truth. So this is our third step of this study, and that's application. And the timeless truth I wrote down was to be a follower of God means to forgive trespasses.
Yeah.
It's to realize that Jesus died on the cross for you, that you can forgive others.
Yeah.
And when a fellow follower comes and asks for forgiveness, even if they have caused you great pain, it's actually your responsibility as a follower to forgive them.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually one of the simpler ways of being like Jesus, though.
Yeah, it is. But it's something I think in our culture today, we really hold on to, you know, like, because we talk about our rights.
Oh, for sure.
Our different types of rights that we have as a citizen or, you know, as just as our basic human rights and stuff like that. It's something that is really, it's really in our culture. And basically it's saying, well, you need to give up your rights sometimes to forgive.
Yeah. It's a higher responsibility as a Christian to live above.
Yeah.
To live above what the standard of the world is.
Yeah. I saw a video my wife showed me yesterday about a man whose brother recently, this is a recent event, I think, his brother was killed kind of by accident by this woman who... She was tired and walked into the wrong apartment, if I understood this right. She was so tired, she just walked into the wrong apartment, and she thought someone was breaking into her apartment. So she shot the guy.
What?
And so, yeah, like...
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. But then at the trial, this guy, he's like devastated, of course, for his loss, but he says like, I forgive you, I wish all the best for you. And he's like basically saying, I kind of wish you didn't have to go to jail. It is the law that you will have to go, of course. But he's like, I forgive you and I just wish the best for you. And it's just such a heartfelt moment.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Where he's lost so much, but he's still like, I'm going to live the example of Christ and I'm going to forgive you.
He's willing to take that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And obviously she was devastated, of course, because that wasn't her intent.
No.
To ever kill someone. And she was just tired. She walked into the wrong apartment even.
Yeah. And that's the hard thing. It's like even when we have the responsibility today as to follow the law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even then, like, we can't expect the law to forgive, but we can forgive
people
that has wronged us.
Wronged us, yeah.
I actually saw that article too. I haven't read it. I just saw that. Yeah. He gave her a hug. yeah. before she went. Crazy. That's just, it's just crazy to see things like that, that people are willing to step back from anger and frustration and be like, okay, man, I get it. Mm-hmm. This is an accident.
Yeah.
You are sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Uh-huh. But I understand that you're sorry and I'm willing to forgive you for it.
Yeah.
It's so countercultural.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It really is.
And in all reality, that was what Jesus lived. That's what Paul living too. That's why he's in prison all the time, because he lived very countercultural.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not saying that everyone should go to prison.
No, no, for sure not. Don't go to prison. Because you're not living in a time where it's illegal to believe in Jesus.
Yeah, at least if you're in the West and you're listening to this podcast. But yeah, I think I might have retold that story a little bit. I might not have gotten all the details right, but I just thought it was so amazing. And to really see that forgiveness of Christ lived out. And I can't. Like, yeah, I don't know what that would be like to meet that person.
And no, just, for sure. It would be so hard. Yeah. So hard.
Yeah.
And like, that's how Jesus expects us to live. Yeah. So, you know, walk out in that and walk in the forgiveness that he has given us. Mm-hmm. It's just bananas to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But it's super fun.
Yeah.
So in all reality, like, that what Paul is asking for here in Philemon,
mm-hmm.
it's not, it's like we're talking about, it's a big deal to forgive someone here, but back then it would just have been looking even more different.
Yeah.
Because that's just your right. They lived on their rights. Mm-hmm. There was nothing like a just society as what we're thinking of it, where it was okay to have your own opinions.
Mm-hmm.
It was just how it was.
Yeah.
So it would have been a huge deal for Philemon to forgive him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah. And what do you think that would reflect to the community around Philemon when Onesimus comes back? Maybe people see, I don't know what it looks like where they live, but maybe people see that Onesimus coming back. Oh, that's the slave that ran away. Oh, he's coming back to Philemon. Uh-oh, he's in for a world of hurt now. Like, what do you think happened when people realized, like, what? He's receiving him with, like, honor.
Yeah. It must have been so weird.
Yeah.
The one thought I'm thinking, this has nothing to do with the book more than things we don't know how it happened. But I'm kind of curious. Wonder if Philemon read the letter before he actually received Onesimus or... Yeah. Or did he receive an SMS and then read the letter?
Yeah.
It's a story we never will know.
No. That'll be hard to know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe seeing Paul's stamp or something on this on this letter, being like, oh, wow, you went to see Paul?
Yeah. And then there is also a lot of theories that Tychicus would have been with him carrying this letter with. So maybe that would have been a stamp enough too.
Maybe.
So it's kind of interesting starting to look through a couple of these books, seeing what's important and like the red thread through all of Paul's letters, even if they're written to like different people.
Yeah.
And different communities.
Yeah, yeah. And this one is an interesting one that stands out a little bit, right? Because it's written so specifically to Philemon.
Yeah, for his, sure.
His kind of personal situation, sort of. But
not sort of. That's exactly what it is. It's like, hey, I appeal for Onesimus. Yeah. Receive him as a brother.
Yeah.
It has very little to do with anything else than just... the situation Philemon and Onesimus is in.
Yeah, but then he gets to be taken into the church and the community and be a brother. And
Paul is like, hey man, use him for the word.
Yeah.
He is so useful. Awesome. Yeah. It's like, it's not just forgive him, it's like bring him into your ministry and the follow workers that you have.
Yeah.
So it's like showing much, much more than we can, I think, even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crazy.
Yeah. So, the letter of Paul to Philemon, a crazy, crazy book.
Yeah.
Short, but packed.
packed with a lot of challenging thoughts.
Yeah.
When you start digging into it.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. So the next book we have been studying is Titus.
Yeah.
Also a very small book, but a little bigger. It has 2 pages and 3 chapters.
Yeah, yeah. There's a little bit more content in there.
Yeah. A little wider than Philemon.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more of a wider structure on it.
Yeah, so this is more like... this is not so like super personal anymore, but it's more speaking into the situation of a church, right?
Yeah. So the theory is that this is one of the pastoral epistles.
Yeah.
Together with 1 and 2 Timothy.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of a discussion among scholars because it seems to be the fun thing to do these days to fight who actually wrote these books.
Yeah, that's true.
So, same thing here. I claim Paul as the writer.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. Some scholars would say that it's not. It's the wrong kind of language.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like Paul's classic writing and stuff like that. And that the church would have been maybe even a little too developed for it to be... written to Titus, that the church structure would have been too developed for the time when it was supposed to be written.
Kind of the language that's used here is not something that Paul would have seen yet, kind of.
Exactly. But then there is also a lot of scholars that's like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Actually, you just think wrong.
Yeah.
And I agree with him. It's like, if I would write a letter to a church, to like a one of our churches home in Sweden, that would look very, very different versus if I wrote a letter to that pastor.
Yeah, especially if you knew the pastor personally.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it seems like Titus and Paul has some type of history there.
Yeah, they seem to be bros somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but Paul is not... in prison here, or at least he's not introducing himself as a prisoner.
Well,
he
just says
Paul, a servant of God. So this is probably written after Acts, because Acts kind of ends with Paul in prison in Rome. So it's probably
in between the two Roman imprisonments. Yes,
exactly. So that's what scholars kind of think, and that's what I've gone with as well. Paul.
Yeah.
Authorship of this so letter.
That would have been after Philemon was written. So somewhere between 62 to 65.
Probably.
Is the theory.
It's the theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
According to these Bible dictionaries and looking through the text and discussing and looking into a bunch of different random stuff. So
yeah.
But that's kind of where I landed. I decided that it's 62 to 65.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a bit of how it is here too. It's looking at information and then taking a stand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Okay, so should we get into some of the content?
I think you should.
Of the letter? Okay. So in this letter, we kind of see Paul starting off in verse 5 with a statement of kind of his earlier relationship with Titus. He says, "This is why I left you in Crete, so that you might put what remained into order and appoint elders." So it seems like Paul and Titus knew each other. They were traveling together for a little bit, and then Paul was like, "Hey, Titus, I'm going to leave you here in Crete because this is kind of a mess. You need to put it in order here. You need to appoint elders." And then he goes on to list like what are some qualifications for elders, and then he moves into a piece on where he's saying that there are a lot of people who are insubordinate, that they're empty talkers and deceivers. He's talking about the circumcision party and that they're teaching is upsetting for whole families in the church, basically.
So he's maybe like, we need to talk a little about who is this circumcision part and what's the big thing of them?
Yeah, okay. So probably they're mentioned somewhere else as well. I forget where now. But they're mentioned somewhere else in the Bible as well. And probably what their teachings are is that you need, in order to receive salvation, you need to be circumcised.
Yeah. It's most likely they're living in old Jewish traditions. So they claim that even Gentiles have to be circumcised to be able to receive Christ.
Yeah.
Which is very much against what Paul has been teaching them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why they're called the circumcision party.
Yeah.
And that's the theory we're going with here, that the Cretan church was full of people from the circumcision party.
Yeah.
So that's kind of...
Or at least there was a group of them in there. And they're just causing all this upsetting in the church because they're teaching something. They're saying everyone needs to be circumcised. And everyone's like, well, am I saved if I'm not circumcised?
Exactly. And that kind of goes against what the Bible talks about overall, where salvation is a free gift.
Yeah.
That salvation is by God's grace through your faith.
Yeah.
Given to you freely.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's the that's kind of what's going on in the church. We see. Yeah. And then he's telling Titus that, you know, he really needs to be like deal with these people. He needs to rebuke them, be sharp with them, and kind of, you know, bring them into line again and bring them into sound doctrine, basically, is what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So then he moves into a piece on what sound doctrine looks like when a person lives it out.
Yeah. And he's talking about older men, older women, younger men, younger women.
Yeah.
Like how they should live.
Yeah. What kind of like characteristics such as self-controlled,
sober-minded, dignified, sober-minded.
Yeah.
I was trying to find sound in faith.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. In love and in steadfastness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not slander and things like that.
Yeah. So he kind of has this introduction in chapter 1 and halfway through chapter 2 where he's talking about these things, about how you should act, how you shouldn't act, kind of, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then kind of halfway through chapter 2 in verse 11, he kind of breaks it off a little bit and he says, why should you live this way?
Yeah.
Well, it's for the grace of God has appeared.
Yeah.
And it has brought salvation for all people. And it's training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled and upright. And it's just so packed and so cool.
Yeah. It's like 3 chapters and you could literally spend hours and hours and hours talking about all the findings in this book.
Yeah.
It's super cool.
Yeah. And I like how he moves into that the part about grace and that it's not they're not something we earn, but it's something God gave to us.
Yeah. And how through God's grace we become heirs of the kingdom. We become members of God's kingdom through his grace.
Yeah.
Should we start in the beginning and just kind of pick apart some stuff and see what we find?
Yeah.
What stood out to you and what stood out to me? And that's the cool thing. You guys get to hear both mine and Johannes' view of things.
Yeah.
And what's important to us. Just to clarify a bit, we very similar. We grew up very, very similar.
Yeah.
But we're still finding out that we think very differently.
Yeah, when it comes to certain things.
Yeah, we have a very different focus.
Yeah.
We still look at the same direction, but what is the important things?
Yeah.
Who is this important for? Uh-huh. What is this talking about? And just our passions play such a big role in what we find is the most interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, yeah. And it probably is, from our personal, what we kind of feel are our personal calls in life as well.
Sure.
You look sort of more to that. But I think it's really cool because in this inductive method, we really get to go through it and pick it apart. But you kind of decide what you think is the main point.
Yeah. It's like what we're trying to do is to find the logic for the from the original author.
Yeah.
But in the end, your mind will have a part of playing and what is important to
the things you see
to these. So
yeah. All right. So do you wanna? Do you have anywhere you want to start?
I don't know. I think it's interesting how he goes straight into. You need to appoint elders. You need to have people that is teaching the sound doctrine, being in leadership and teaching others.
Yeah.
And I just that stood out to me very very early on, just how they had so much people with power. Mm-hmm. Or that took power that just messed up the church. But but Paul is telling Titus, like, hey, man, you need to find some people that's going to be willing to tell them that they're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of also counterculture to be like, hey, you're wrong, man. That's kind of a scary place to be in. But it's kind of cool to see what he's saying. He's very, very like... structured. This is what we need in our leaders.
Yeah.
And this is what they can't have.
Yeah.
But they need these things.
Yeah.
So he's just talking about a bunch of characteristics, mm-hmm. Which today would have been kind of like the norm. But back then, the world looked a bit different. Yep. So not necessarily the most normal thing to be... above approach and one husband of one wife and his children are believers and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination, whatever.
Insubordination.
Yeah. But even that being faithful to one person might not have been the most normal thing in that culture.
True.
With all those beliefs that existed in that world.
Yeah.
Now I don't know exactly how Crete was, but in that area there was a lot of weird religions, mystery religions, overall pretty weird beliefs.
Yeah.
Where it was a lot of immoral rituals to them. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's cool that Paul starts off with this, right? And he's saying that you need this eldership, you need these leaders, so that you have a kind of a solid foundation and structure to stand upon, because he says, for there are many. And then he's going on to her, like, there are these people who are gonna be like upsetting, they're gonna be deceivers. And they're going to teach for their shameful gain. And like he's sort of setting up, like, if you don't have solid leaders and elders, you know, you're going to be bad off, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And he talks about that too, to like this eldership, that they need to be willing to rebuke them who is not following the way.
Uh-huh.
Which is also kind of interesting, like... how often they referred it as to the way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're falling off the path, it's like Paul is asking them to rebuke their lies.
Yeah. What if we called Christianity the way?
Yeah,
today,
that would have been cool. The way.
Probably sound maybe a little sick-ish. But.
Yeah, very, very, very
But cultish. That's also kind of what they were seen like.
It seems like that was one of the things.
Because they were so weird.
Yeah, and they were so controversial compared to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
In this text, it also talks about the Cretans. One of their own prophets had said that Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons. Oof. Yeah, that hurts.
Yeah,
I wonder if what Paul would say about us. and but Paul also say that is the truth.
Yeah,
that's true. And they're devoting themselves to Jewish myths and commands people to turn away from the truth.
Yeah.
So they have people in the church that's like, no. The God is the God of the Jewish people, and they have like kind of just distorted the belief of who God is. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very interesting. Interesting overall.
Yeah.
This whole part. I like how he goes on and on to go into talking about to the pure, all things are pure, but the defiled and the unbelieving, nothing is pure.
Yeah.
But both their minds and their consequences are defiled.
Yeah.
They profess to know God, but they deny him by their works. They are detestable, disobedient, and unfit for any good works. That's kind of, that's some gnarly words to get like slapped in your face.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just how it is, it's like, and that's very challenging for me to think about today. We have, I believe that we have a lot of people in the church today that's like half there, you know? Mm-hmm. People that's like, okay, I believe in God, but I believe this and this and this and this and this. That is very unbiblical, mm-hmm. or very just not loving or godly.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a challenging thought that to think of that all these people that believe these things are wrong. And you cannot be wrong in one part and be okay in the rest. According to this, this is what Paul say. If you're like disobedient in one part mm-hmm. of your life, your whole heart is bad.
Yeah.
To be pure, you need to be pure and all of you be pure.
Yeah.
Very challenging.
Yeah, it is for sure.
And it's I think we have grace there. I hope we have grace there. I'm thinking about like Romans where it talks about sanctification, that it's a process. So I don't know how that looks like with our actions or if that is a heart issue. I haven't thought too much about this, but
maybe we'll see once we come to Romans.
Yes. But
there's a lot to unpack. But yeah. I like where Paul moves kind of with this, you know, and in 1:16 there he says they profess to know God. So with their mouths, they're like, we know God, you know? But then they deny him by their works.
Exactly.
And it says they're detestable, disobedient, and unfit for any good work. And I just love where he kind of is going with this, you know? Like how a solid relationship with God, being saved and living in relationship with God, how that should move into, that should reflect in your actions.
Yeah, oh, for
sure.
That
should be shown. Like, the things you do in this world, they should be seen as good. And they should be seen as, you know, something that helps. And, you know, something that is of good use for us.
Yeah.
Something that makes this world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
I really like how you know, he sees that. It's not only by what people say, but, hey, if you're a believer, man, it's going to show.
Yeah. And that's a very good challenge for the church today, where I think it's hard because we have a lot of believers, including myself, that you cannot tell. You can't tell the difference between a believer or a non-believer. But according to Paul here, and I think that's a challenge for us that we need to figure mm-hmm. out how to live that way. But to be a believer, that should be shown in everything you do.
Yeah.
Very challenging.
Yeah.
Very challenging. But really cool stuff, though.
Yeah, it is. I kind of liked where he was sort of moving into that, you know, like with all these good things, how you should, you know, what characteristics you should show. And, you know, being a follower of Christ, in the end, it should result in these things. And he's saying, you know, he's telling Titus, like, teach them, you know, to devote themselves to good works. Like the things that are good, things that make a difference in this world. It sounds like Paul is really wanting the church not to just be a gathering of people focusing on God, which is awesome, but from that gathering of people should also come good works, and that people would actually look up on the church and see, hey, they're doing some pretty good stuff for our community, for wherever you're at, you know? They're doing some pretty good stuff for these people who have a terrible time. You know, they're making life easier for them. It kind of seems like Paul is like, I want the church to look like this, you know? This is how we reflect Christ.
Yeah, well, for sure. That our actions should line up with what everything looks like.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool how he also, go to continue after that, like when he's talking about teaching sound doctrine,
mm-hmm.
That it's not just the elders that's called to teach sound doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fascinating when you start looking into it a bit more that you're digging into like the old men to teach the young men.
Yeah.
And the old women to teach the young women.
Yeah.
But when you start thinking about it, the young women will become old women.
Yeah.
And then they're called to teach the young women.
Yeah.
And just that circle, Paul is basically uh-huh. building a machine that's continually going to yeah. bless the world.
Yeah.
It's not just the man in front of the pulpits mm-hmm. that is going to speak yeah. into the church. Yeah. It's everyone.
Yeah.
It's the whole, it's just a big machine that mm-hmm. where everything just moves together. That's Paul's dream.
Yeah.
To see that here, it's like to see that Paul is just asking the church to
yeah.
to teach themselves yeah.
Yeah.
together.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he's stating the importance of having leaders and elders to
for sure.
who's showing the right way and kind of correcting when you're off, you know. But then it really is up to each and every individual believer. It is up to the believer, like. They're responsible for their actions.
Yeah, it's super cool.
It's not up to, you know, someone can teach you like so many things from up front, but unless you are willing to take that to heart and actually change your life,
yeah,
it's not going to make a difference.
The responsibility all of a sudden falls on the follower that's called to do certain things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not just the speaker in the front that is responsibility. It's the whole body of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone, they're responsible for their own actions and what impact they have in this world.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the perfect place to segue into the next part of the book.
All right.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where all of a sudden we're talking more about teaching.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
It's kind of mind blowing. In 2:11, mm-hmm. where Paul just changes everything, he basically breaks up the book there into two different parts and is going into a totally different idea. Where the first idea more have been appoint elders and this is how you should live, but here he's more going into everything else, where it's like by salvation God is teaching grace and good works.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of the topics I've wrote on this part of the book in our assignment. So
yep.
Do
you wanna go into it a little bit more?
Yeah, for sure. I just like to start in the first part there.
Yeah. Yeah.
11-12.
Mm-hmm.
For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in the present age.
Yeah.
It's kind of mind-blowing.
Wow.
Yeah. When you start picking that apart and realizing, for the grace of God has appeared.
Yeah. It's already appeared.
It has appeared.
Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah. It's already here.
Continuously bringing, or uh-huh. at least it is, at that time, it is bringing. Mm-hmm. I still believe that God is still bringing this to us.
I believe salvation is still brought to us too.
Yeah, I believe so.
But yeah.
But he is continuously bringing. It's not people bringing salvation to people. It is God bringing salvation to people.
And it's not grace appeared and it brought salvation.
No.
It is grace appeared and it is bringing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's cool.
Yeah. And the grace of God is continuously training us.
Yes.
I love that.
I love the word training.
Yeah. I think it's really hard to grasp what is happening here, though.
I think training to me is an active participation verb.
Oh, I like that.
It kind of is like teaching in a sense that it's like giving us information, showing us how to, but we have to go through it.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to go through it again and again and again. You don't just train for something once.
Yeah.
You continuously train for it and you get better and better and better and better. And it's not like a certain stage that you all of a sudden reach. It's not a test that you're going to do and you passed. Now you're saved. Now you are living self-controlled and godly lives.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's training us continuously to renounce the ungodliness.
Yeah.
And continuously training us to become more and more godly.
That is awesome.
So yeah, I just love the sort of active participation there.
Yeah, for sure.
It's up to each and every one of us. Kind of like what he was saying before.
But
like,
also the active role that God takes in it too.
Yeah.
It's like it's activity from both parts.
Yeah.
It takes both that God is willing to train us, but also we be willing to participate in his training.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's not God just snaps his finger and call it good.
Mm-mm.
God is like, I'm going to walk with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to teach you.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to love you.
Yeah.
Instead of, I'm going to control you.
Yeah.
There's very little love and control.
Wow. Oh, man, that's deep. I didn't even think about that when I went through.
No.
That is so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, God is so good.
Yeah, for sure he is.
Wow. He not only brought us salvation, but he's also willing to walk with us and stay with us and train us how to live lives.
Oh, for sure. And that's like the whole idea too. And the end goal for him is,
wow,
I'm going to train you that you can do good works on
earth. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's like, I'm training you so that you can put away the old self that you have, the old ways that you were living in, the things that you did that like weren't actually for any good in this world. And he's like, I'm committing. Not only did I save you, I'm committing to training you to become someone who actually makes a difference in this world.
Oh yeah. It's wow. Super sick. It's super sick.
Wow. He's so good.
It's so much, it's so much bigger than just salvation.
Yeah.
But that is also a little bit why I think that we as modern Christians, me included, take salvation a little easy sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But also God's grace. I believe that a lot of us take God's grace very... we don't give it as much credit as it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it kind of continues down here, just to continue a little bit in the text too.
Yeah.
And see down in 14, who gave himself for us to redeem self, a people for his own possession, who are zealous for good works.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about, I want to train people that becomes so possessive of his purified heart.
Mm-hmm.
That you become zealous for good works. That the only reaction to the grace he has given us is to go out and do things about it.
Mm. Yeah,
that's just mind blowing. And I'm looking back at my own life, and I'm like, I don't know if I take God serious enough.
Uh-huh.
It's been a really cool challenge to read these things and realize that.
Yeah.
Actually, the only worthy action or reaction to God's grace is to go out and do good things.
Yeah.
And not because I have to, because that's the only thing that God is worthy of in this situation.
Yeah.
Is to go out and do good things.
Yeah, exactly.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah,
mind-blowing.
Yeah. Yeah, when you really dive into the depths of God's grace, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's where he should lead you.
It's for sure.
Like, it's not that it's an obligation, but it is like, this is the only response I have to
this. It's an opportunity to respond.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, man, I'm going to make this world a better place.
Yeah. No, it's insane. It's insane.
Yeah.
Can't say much else. It's insane.
It's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. There's so much more to dig into this, but in the end, it comes down to that God saved us by his grace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way that we actually can enter into the kingdom is through God's grace.
Yeah.
We cannot work our way into the kingdom.
No.
But a worthy response
yeah.
to being a part of the kingdom, being heirs of the kingdom,
yep.
a worthy response is to do good works for him.
Yeah.
it's not required to get the salvation, but it almost becomes a requirement because that is how good he is.
Yeah.
He deserves that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of mind-blowing.
It is.
Crazy. Yeah.
And it's challenging.
Oh, for sure, challenging.
But when we dive deeper into who God is, his faithfulness, his goodness, his grace, like, man, we just fall deeper in love with him. Like, that's a response.
Yeah. For sure. This has been so cool.
Yeah.
I hope you guys finished this episode. Listen to this. Number two.
Number two. Yeah. Wow.
First real one, but first number two.
Yeah.
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 So this is a bit how we are going to run this. We're just bringing you alongside us.
Yeah.
Discussing what we're finding.
Yep.
The findings. So we just want to thank all the people that has been willing to sponsor us.
Yep.
The people that's been willing to come alongside our journey of exploring more of Jesus for the calling that he has on our lives.
Yep.
So we just thank everyone that has made that possible.
Yeah, thank you.
Have fun. Thank you, guys.